Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world. But we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Corn, I hereby grant you a full pardon. Thank you, Corn.
The annual turkey pardoning, I'm still very disappointed because I had predicted in 2016, I guess it would have been 2017, January 2017, when President Trump pardoned his first turkeys. I thought, wouldn't it be great if he says, no, I'm not going to pardon you. You guys are going under the guillotine. It would have been more Trump-like had he done that. But listen to this. This is making the viral rounds this afternoon. I remember we played this. We played this in 2018. We always play the pardoning of the turkeys. It's, I think, federal law. If you work on the radio or in the media, you have to play these things. But this one's rather ironic when you listen back.
Today's lucky bird and guest of honor is named Pease, along with his alternate named Carrots. The children will understand that. The winner of this vote was decided by a fair and open election conducted on the White House website. This was a fair election. Unfortunately, Carrots refused to concede and demanded a recount, and we're still fighting with Carrots. And I will tell you, we've come to a conclusion. Carrots, I'm sorry to tell you, the result did not change.
Who names these turkeys? I think that's my question. Peas and carrots and corn, and we need better turkey names. All right, let's start this afternoon. Steve Ellman from St. Charles County, he's the county executive, is going to join me at 2:20. I'm told that he may have some breaking news for us this afternoon, so we'll look forward to that. But I want to kind of offer a little bit more perspective on some of the zaniness that's going on with COVID. And I'll start with the notion, and I addressed this yesterday, that I've always taken this seriously. And I think things are about to get really, really bad, like really bad with death numbers and things like that toward Christmas and probably beyond, because most people aren't really, they're living their lives. They're moving on. I told you about my brush with COVID going. I warned all of you for 4 or 5 days. Hey, we got deer season coming up. Be careful of small hunting cabins. I go into a hunting cabin, found out that someone in that cabin tested positive. Now, none of us had masks on in that cabin. None of us were infected. There is an operating theory that the person who tested positive had the coronavirus 5-6 weeks previous and still kind of shot off a positive test. I don't know. I can't tell you with any certainty. But what I can tell you is you can compare and contrast that story that I told you yesterday with a story that I heard today. I spoke with a friend who is in about day 13, 14, recovering from the coronavirus, went into a situation in a relatively medium-sized room, I think he said, was wearing a mask. Another person in the room was wearing a mask. The other person was wearing a mask. That one person took, they were doing a little video work, and one person took off the mask briefly, but they were more than 6 feet apart, and the other two people in the room were infected. and they infected other people. So, look, it's happening, and my advice for everyone, even though I don't like the government clamping down and telling you what to do, I just simply don't, and I think everything is local and regionalized, so we're not like California, New York, or anything like that. But I do think it's serious, and people need to make some smart decisions. This is me, okay? Even though I'm the guy that went to the hunting cabin, and I did it because I was selfish and I wanted to go deer hunting because I've done it every year of my life since about 1993 or so. I was late to the game. I was an adult. But if you're wavering, here's what I'd say. I know a lot of you aren't going to pay attention, and you're just going to do what you're going to do, and that's fine. You know, I think you should do that and, I guess, deal with potential consequences. But if you're someone who's wavering right now, I would say don't travel. Don't do it. Don't have people over because this is not the time to do that. Now, having said that, here's some of the goofy, wacky, zaniness going out there, and a lot of it doesn't make sense. I'll tell you that. Yesterday, I highlighted the situation in Pennsylvania where from 5 p.m. tomorrow, the day before Thanksgiving, the biggest drinking night of the year, until 8 a.m. the following morning, there's no alcohol sales that are going to be allowed in Pennsylvania. So that's just silly for a variety of reasons, because you have a situation. By the way, the governor of Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf, said, well, the thing that we can't do is ignore reality and say, yeah, you folks, for no fault of your own, have been hit hardest, but the virus is doing this. It's not me. He's talking about the bars and restaurants. It's not the administration. It's not the government. Well, it kind of is, and I'm going to get into that here in just a moment a little bit more specifically with some of the things that people hear they think are true that may or may not be true. But are people who are having a beer or a gin and tonic or, you know, a Bud Light seltzer, whatever those things are called. Those are hot right now. I don't drink, so I don't know. Dave's probably laughing at me and making fun of me. Are they more at risk than someone who is like me drinking a Diet Coke at my table? I don't know. I don't know why that makes sense. Now, I guess you can say, well, look, people, and there's something to this. People who are drinking and they get a few in them and they, you know, they start maybe spitting a little and, you know, then you got issues with that. But it does not make sense. Then you have this story. I'm not going to have time to do this today. I did not leave myself enough time in this opening segment, but I'll see how much I can get to. This is in the LA Times on Sunday. The headline was, "Face Mask Trial Didn't Stop Coronavirus Spread, But It Shows Why More Mask Wearing Is Needed." Okay, bear with me. Follow along here. Back in the early days of COVID-19, researchers in Denmark decided to conduct an unusual experiment to test the infection-fighting power of face masks, the same way they'd evaluate a potential vaccine or drug. At the time, mask use was not recommended by the health authorities. Fewer than 5% of the residents used them outside of hospital settings. So they thought it was really good conditions to do the first, and apparently the only, randomized control trial of face coverings. So they had 6,000 volunteers from around the country, Denmark. They spent 3 hours a day with people from other households and didn't wear masks for their jobs. About half of the volunteers were chosen to receive surgical masks and were asked to wear them whenever they left the home for the next month. The other half did not get masks, and they served as controls. 95 of the 4,862 volunteers who made it to the end of the study became infected with SARS. That's an infection rate of 2%, under 2%. So 95 of the 4,800 became infected. But no matter how, this is where it gets interesting, but no matter how the researchers sliced and diced their data, they could not find a strong signal that the volunteers in the mask group were more protected than their counterparts in the control group. So the story says this. Well, in a typical clinical trial, this is the point where researchers would say their intervention didn't work, but not with the coronavirus. No, 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 no. You do a study like this, it shows, well, wait a second, some people wearing masks, other people aren't wearing masks. They're kind of getting it at the same rate. It's not making any difference in the world. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. But what they're arguing in their research is the problem was people didn't use masks enough. So now they say, well, this should not be used to conclude that a recommendation for everyone to wear masks in the community would not be effective in reducing SARS-CoV-2 infections. Masks likely need to be worn by most, if not all, people to reduce community infection rates. The results of this trial should motivate widespread mask wearing to protect our communities and thereby ourselves. Now, Dave, am I going to get into trouble here with my time? Because I want to be careful here. So I don't know exactly where we are with all this stuff. Just tell me where I am. Well, he might not hear me. Okay. I got to be careful. I might have to hold on some of this until a little later. Let me just play this. This was in the news today. And, you know, I think it's interesting. And I understand that these healthcare workers are very taxed. This is a guy named Kenneth Remy. And he did a video. He's a WashU physician. He takes the camera with a light and a breathing tube, and he basically says, and we play the audio here, this is a simulation of the last thing you might see if you're being ventilated because you can't breathe on your own. So, Dave, roll the audio here.
This is what it looks like when you breathe 40 times a minute, have an oxygen level that's dipping well below 80. This is what it's going to look like. I hope that the last moments of your life don't look like this, because this is what you'll see at the end of your life if we don't start wearing masks when we're out in public. I promise you, this will be what you see. I promise you, this is what your mother or your father or your children, when they get COVID disease, will see at the end of their life. This is serious. I beg you, please practice the precautions to reduce transmission of COVID disease.
Well, look, I may be the only one saying this today. Tony Messenger has this, you know, glowing calm. I think that was reckless and irresponsible of that physician to do that, to scare the hell out of people and say and make a claim. This is the thing that bugs me about the mask thing, to make a claim that mask wearing is going to save society. Because if you can, what those researchers in Denmark will say is, look, if you can put a mask on everyone for however many weeks, are we going to reduce this thing? Of course we are. But let's be realistic about where people are. People in this country, you can require, Joe Biden can come in and say everyone in this country has to wear a mask. Everybody, mask mandate. What's the cooperation level going to be with something like that? The overwhelming majority of people, overwhelming, it's not even close, are going to be okay with the coronavirus. But yes, according to Dr. Remy and others, you're right. Some people are going to end up in the ICU. Some people are going to die. Some people are dying. Way too many people. But what good does that do? To scare the hell out of people when they are so confused to begin with about mask wearing because the health officials started this in a confusing way to begin with? And by the way, this is something I don't have time to get into. This is interesting, too. I had a series of things. Right before I go on the air this afternoon, I see this news alert that says the CDC is considering reducing the quarantine time from 14 days to 7 to 10 days. Well, that's a game changer right there. My question is, why is it 14 days? You got people who are not infected putting their lives on hold right now because they think they have to wait for 14 days. So that's confusing. You issue that, and then people are going to say, wait a second, why did I wait 15 days? Then a New York Times story. Small gatherings spread the virus, but are they causing the surge? And they go into all these details. By the way, this is interesting. In Minnesota right now, if you lived in Minnesota, thank God we don't, right? You cannot go outside with your neighbors, right? You can't even get together with people outside of your house. But, and this is where it's ridiculous. So he's banned people, Governor Tim Walz, he's banned people from different households from meeting indoors or outdoors. Even though the evidence shows that outdoors, that's safe. But that executive order, this is how screwed up government is right now with all this. It allows churches, funeral homes, wedding venues, while they are encouraged to hold virtual events, to host as many as 250 people indoors. So you have 250 people indoors if you're going to church or a funeral home or a wedding, but you can't go three doors down to your neighbor's house and visit in the backyard. See, this bends credibility for healthcare workers. It bends credibility for Dr. Remy at WashU because people don't know what to believe because this is all confusing right now. And it's frustrating. I think the messaging is very frustrating. We'll find out what Steve Ellman's going to do in St. Charles County next on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on KMOX.
Kara Spencer, another mayoral candidate for the city of St. Louis. I've never had Alderman Spencer on the show. She's going to join us here a little bit after the bottom of the hour. And let me see. Take a look. Usually you would think I would commit some of these things to memory, but you would be wrong, ladies and gentlemen. Got to figure out what I'm doing in the next hour. We have, Dave Simons. You know, we could be looking at a record close on Wall Street today. And Rex Singfield is going to be here. He's the founder of the St. Louis Chess Club and he has been watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix. So I want Rex's review, former House Speaker Tim Jones, and an audio cut of the day as well. St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman is back with me this afternoon, sort of an update on the coronavirus in St. Charles County. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Fine, Mark. It sounds like you're as frustrated as I am by all this.
Yeah, it is, because the messaging is very, very confusing. So do you have some things to pass along this afternoon?
Yeah, we do. And you mentioned this whole concept of a 14-day quarantine for people who are not actually infected but have had close contact. And that has been a real problem with our schools. As you know, we've made a tremendous effort out here. And I'm very proud of our school boards and our superintendents and our teachers and students and parents and everybody, because we have made a tremendous effort to try to get everybody into school. And one of the biggest problems that they've had is under the CDC guidelines, if someone in the class is infected, everybody within 6 feet of that person in the class has to stay home for 14 days. The governor suggested another approach. We've been working with the superintendents, and today we announced that we have an agreement and starting next week, students who would otherwise have to quarantine at home will be able to go to school as long as they have a strict mask policy, and the students and the teachers will be able to continue to learn, and the superintendents think that's a really important step for us to take.
I think it's a real important step, and I can use my personal example. I don't know if you heard me talking about my brush
many times.
My deer camp. But so what happened was, Steve, my daughter's not in school right now, and she won't have school the rest of the week. But we because we had contact, we were concerned, we wanted to be safe, we locked it down. And that meant we had, you know, so I did the responsible thing. I told the school, and that means she can't come back until Monday. But there was no reason, really, to do that in the end. But this is what happened. So this is another aspect of this that I think is important that I want to cover. So let's say, just kind of play this out, I'm going to be done with my quarantine, right? I'm out of quarantine. My daughter's back at school. But all of a sudden, we get contact this weekend, we find out, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then you got another 14 days. You can't go on and survive this way. There just can't.
No. And in St. Charles County, your daughter would be able to go ahead and go to school. She'd still have to quarantine on the weekends and in the evening and whatever, but she would be able to go to school, and her teacher in the same similar situation would also be able to be there to teach her. And we just think that's a big deal. And as far as the mask issue is concerned, you know, I've been saying this from the beginning several times on your show. You know, it's real easy to order people to do something. The hard part is to convince them it's the right thing to do so that they do it without governmental coercion. And we've had a lot of elected officials ordering people to do things, to wear masks and other things, but haven't done a real good job of convincing them it's the right thing to do. And as a result, we have, for instance, last weekend after Tuesday, we've had all sorts of people who disagree with what's going on in St. Louis County coming out to St. Charles County. And in some cases, that's not been a problem. But when it comes to 20-somethings, after 11 o'clock at night, what we have is a situation where if they're going to drink and socialize, if they're from Illinois or for St. Louis City or County, the only place they can do that is out here. And we had a real influx last weekend. It created some real problems. And again, we're wanting to address the spread. So the other thing we did today, as well as take care of the school problem, is to order our bars to close at 11 o'clock, which is the same rules that everybody else is living with on the other side of the river. So we think that's an important step.
Let me go back to the schools issue, because in my mind, I could almost hear the editorial department at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch typing something about you wanting to kill teachers and kids, Steve. You know what I mean, though.
That's funny. I've got I've been emailing back and forth with the editorial board editor about some of the very issues today. But see, the thing about it is, we do, and they pointed out several times how there's a study that says there's more cases in St. Charles County, and there are for the last 6 or 8 weeks. And you know why that is? because our kids started school and they didn't in some other places. 30% of the exposures, according to our contact tracers, 30% of our exposures in the county are in the schools. All right? Now, that's bad news because we got more people sick, but it's also the good news is that most of those kids, as you know, don't end up in the hospital. But you have to not just look at the health issues, you have to look at the educational issues. And the question is, what is it worth doing this if it means our kids are going to be back in school and learning and their parents are going to be able to go to work and not worry about their kids being at home? So there's a trade-off on all this.
I think there is, and I like your approach, but you know that you will be criticized over it. And then in the meantime, what about the hospital situation in St. Charles County? Because we're hearing and we know that these beds are, well, the ICU, the ventilators are filling up. You made this point last week. We're not going to we have enough beds, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. This is what you said, but it's the ICU and the ventilators, right?
It's the ICU. Well, it's the staffing issues. And, of course, there's all kinds of questions surrounding that. But, you know, back in July when everybody else was going with the mandate, we said we're not going to. But we started back then already trying to educate people that, hey, wear a mask. And more importantly, I think, social distance. So we've been saying that over and over. And over the last 6 weeks, we've been redoubling our efforts. We have 10 billboards up now in St. Charles County telling people to wear your mask, social distance, and avoid large crowds. We had a mass mailing that went out yesterday to everybody explaining the crisis, potential crisis in the hospitals, and asking them to do that. We got 800,000 additional masks last Wednesday. Our law enforcement people in the county have been handing them out. We've got 31 county employees that are going to work on Friday, on Black Friday, and are going to be at all the venues, all the shopping venues, and handing out masks to shoppers who would like to take one. And we're going to continue to try to get people to wear the mask and do the social distancing and avoid the crowds and everything. But we're just a lot more reluctant to put it in law and threaten
and
law enforcement.
Well, you probably heard me even talk about the situation with the mandates in Minnesota. So you can't go outside even with people from other households outside or in a park or something that people you do stuff like that. And then people say all the rest of the stuff is nonsense. So you lose credibility when you issue mandates like that. I really believe that because people sit back and say, you're out of your minds. And then they don't take the rest of it carefully. Steve, I appreciate coming on here. We'll get the word out. And thanks for sharing that and passing that along this afternoon.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
We had Dave was texting me earlier, and I forgot to mention this, but apparently there's some Randy Arozarena controversy because he is in a domestic situation. I don't want to convict him, obviously, before we know all the facts, but there was a situation where I guess he is in the news today, so we'll keep track of that. Kevin Wheeler coming up a little later. We spent a little bit of time yesterday on the mayor's race for the city of St. Louis. Louis Reed was here. Donna Berger, who might run. She hasn't decided. Kara Spencer is an Alder person. I'm going to be correct on that, I think. And she joins me this afternoon. She has entered the race as well. I don't believe she's ever been on this show, so it's history in the making. Kara Spencer, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I think I want to talk as we get going here about your son, Cy, because I'm looking at your bio, and it says that he is a semi-pro Lego builder. That's sort of interesting to me. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, Legos is his thing. He's very, very good at it. The semi-pro designation was self-imposed, if you will. I think it's well-deserved. He spends a lot of time building Legos around here.
That is awesome. Yeah, my five-and-a-half-year-old gets into the Legos every once in a while as well. All right, Kara Spencer, why do you want to be mayor of St. Louis?
Look, St. Louis needs a new direction. And, you know, these next 4 years are going to be very tough unless we have a mayor who's willing to take on tough challenges. Our current past, the high crime rates, our poverty, racial segregation, these will continue to hold back not just the city of St. Louis, but the entire St. Louis community. And I am the candidate with the track record of going the extra mile, digging in deep, and answering to nobody but the people of St. Louis. And I'm ready to take the helm.
So what is your crime plan? I mean, I don't think that a lot of people would argue about the situation that the city's in right now with where we need to sort of focus the attention. There are a lot of challenges. We know that. But crime has to really be taken care of first and foremost, and it's getting worse, not better. Now, COVID might have some to do with that, but we know this is a complicated issue, and we keep racking up bodies, and the crime is not good. And I work downtown when there is a downtown where people are working, and I've even said in the past, and I think I'm in Alderman Coder's district, that even in some of those areas near the War Memorial and Enterprise Center and where I used to work, I sometimes don't feel safe down there. So what's the plan?
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, we've got some exciting things going in our community right now. But unless we get the crime under control, nothing else really matters. I mean, people are not going to come downtown. They're not going to come to the city. We're going to continue to lose residents if we don't get this under control. So our crime plan, my crime plan, is really rooted in trust. We have got to rebuild the fabric of our community and our police department. The people that are experiencing violent crime in their community, and many of them don't trust our police department. They're not able to give the information to the police that they need to solve these issues. And that's a real problem. And we have been instead taking sides. And, you know, in order to really mend the fabric between our community and our police department, we have to set the table for everyone to sit at. It's critically important that we have a mayor that understands that, yes, we have a real trust issue with our police department, and we're willing to engage in that messy and sometimes painful conversation. But on the other side, that we cannot do this without our police department. And we have to be setting the table for that conversation to move forward. And it's the mayor's job to do that.
So what do you do? I mean, you're right. You have people in these communities, they don't trust the police, and that makes things worse. There have been efforts, and I know Jimmy Edwards has been working on that. Is Jimmy Edwards not doing enough? Does someone else need to be in that position? Do you have criticism of the way that Mayor Crewson has handled this up until this point?
Look, I mean, we have people that are, like I said, you know, not trusting the system, you know, and the easiest thing, first and foremost, to fix on the front end of this is making sure that when people do want to engage in the police, when they call 911, we pick up the phone. Believe it or not, 25% of calls to 911 end in a delayed response. That delayed response is a recording that says, hang on, all operators are busy, we'll be with you shortly. When there's gunfire in front of your house, when there's an emergency, that is unacceptable. Failing to really, you know, just to pick up the phone and answer the call when people are reaching out and willing to engage in their police department is the first step in rebuilding that trust. And I would argue that there are several other ways in which we can do that.
Some of us, me and others, feel that our circuit attorney is not doing enough when it comes to the issue of crime in the city. I think that Mayor Crewson and others have been very unwilling to criticize her. Do you think that Kim Gardner's doing a good job?
I think it's incredibly important that we provide paths of justice outside of the street. Right now, many of our, you know, many folks in St., you know, throughout the city feel like they're not getting justice through the traditional manner, and that's a disservice. So, you know, I'm committed to helping and working with our elected circuit attorney, because let's face it, she's going to be serving for the next 4 years. I'm committed to working within that system and helping to make sure that victims of crime, especially violent crime, are getting justice in a traditional manner and do not have to rely on street justice.
Do you think there's a lot of disagreement? I think that you know, and this gets politicized, obviously, but I do think that more so than ever, there's a lot of agreement on, for example, the drug laws and decriminalization and things along those lines. Look, I've been a fan of that for 40 years, so I'm real happy for what's going on right now with that. But do you feel like there's disagreement with those types of changes moving forward with criminal justice?
I'm not sure I exactly understand the question. I mean, let me rephrase it this way.
So I think I heard you say something along the lines of, You don't want people prosecuted for things, I don't think, and I don't want people thrown in jail for drug crimes, things that could be handled in other ways, especially marijuana or small possession, all things like that. We seem to be moving away from that, and that's the libertarian streak in me, although I'm libertarian conservative. I feel like there's a lot of agreement on that. So aren't we making progress in some of those areas? I hear Wesley Bell, I hear Kim Gardner talk about those types of reforms, but we have agreement on that type of criminal justice reform, don't we?
I think we do. I think that's a pretty consistent position throughout the St. Louis area. And I think that's a good thing, as you point out. I mean, it's very expensive to incarcerate people. And we spend an enormous amount of money, not just in the state and the federal level, but here locally, millions of dollars a year we have people that we spend incarcerated and waiting for trial. I think it's important that we take a look at making sure those folks are moving through the system as quickly as possible and either exonerated or, you know, convicted, and they move through our local jail system so that we don't have the burden of paying for them and so that we can make sure that anybody who's not guilty is not held. And those who are put in a high security state or federal prison.
I guess if you go back when Lyda Crewson was elected in the first couple of years of the administration, there was a big push, as you know, for more regionalism, and you had the talk of the city county merger, and I believe the mayor was pretty big fan of that. So that idea has kind of gone by the wayside at this point, but the need for the better relationships and the regional cooperation has not gone away. So how do you handle that moving forward?
Absolutely. The lack of regionalism, I think, is one of the biggest things holding our broader community back. You know, when Better Together came out before I was in elected office, I was a huge fan. I think many of us were. And even when the current mayor took office, you know, that this was, I think, still moving in the right direction. The details, however, of that particular plan were horrifying. And I think to have that dissolved was a good thing. But I don't agree that conversation has gone by the wayside. In fact, it's been picked up by many of our regional leaders within the St. Louis municipal area. The Municipal League of St. Louis put together the Board of Freeholders. They push for that. They help fund that initiative, and they are continuing to fight for it. I find that enormously hopeful. I mean, you have these mayors of the municipal, you know, areas around St. Louis City who are really pushing this forward. You know, these are the folks that could lose a little bit of their power through a restructuring and have to go back to their constituencies and explain why this is so important. They're the ones pushing this, and I find that enormously hopeful. It's the city that has failed to put their freeholders at the table. And if the city comes to the table to do that, I think that conversation could be very healthy and very beneficial to that larger concept.
Alderwoman Kara Spencer is running for mayor, entered the race yesterday. Where is the money? Look, you need money to do things, and the city is strapped. We know that. There are, you know, further implications from COVID. For example, I'm going to fight as hard as I can, just being honest here, to not pay the earnings tax as I sit in my home in St. Louis County for the last 8 months, because I pay it when I'm in the city of St. Louis. So I think my accountant's going to have some success there. But that puts the city in a worse situation. I know there's going to be legal fights. I feel pretty comfortable with my position. But where's the money going to come from is the bottom line.
Well, sure. I hope you reconsider that position, because I know that you're going to want to have police officers around when you come in to work. And you still have an office space, even if you're not currently occupying it. That being said, it does take money. You're absolutely right. And the city's going to have to be very smart about how we move forward. You may know my track record of pushing back when deals don't make sense, arguing on behalf of the bottom line for city taxpayers. I do it every day down at the Board of Aldermen, and I will continue to do that as mayor. We will be finding ways of saving money and finding pockets. You know, it's unfortunate that so many of our audits have come back time and time again with the same results. We know there is waste within the system, and it's the mayor's job to go and find those pockets and pull them together. I mean, I know where some of those are, and we're going to work to make sure that every single penny is accounted for and nothing's wasted. It's going to be incredibly important that we have somebody who is that committed to making sure that the city doesn't waste a single penny. You know, we had proposals recently that are extremely wasteful. For example, let's take a look at the most recent proposal at the Board of Aldermen to reduce crime, taking $2 million out of our general fund, out of our reserve fund, and giving it to Crime Stoppers, who is, by the way, a pretty good organization, an organization that has doled out reward money every year for the last 15 years, totaling of about $130,000. To give them $2 million out of our reserve fund at a time when we're about to go bankrupt is lunacy. And these are the type of political solutions to very complex issues that we have seen time and time again that A, don't work, and B, are enormously wasteful.
Alderwoman Kara Spencer, I appreciate it. I'm short on time at this point, but thanks for, I know the campaign reached out. I'm glad to have you on. I think this is pretty important moving toward the spring, so we'll have more conversations. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon.
Absolutely. Happy to come on anytime.
2:47 at the Voice of St. Louis. We'll take a break. We're coming back with more. We got a jam-packed 3 o'clock hour as well and an audio cut of the day.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX.
Well, it looks like a pretty big day on Wall Street, and we'll find out if the Dow closes over 30,000 here. The closing bell in just a few minutes. Dave Simons, the host of Dollars and Cents on KMOX, joins me after 3 o'clock. I mentioned Rex Singfield coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, and former House Speaker Tim Jones. It looks like, I don't know if you noticed this yesterday, I haven't touched upon this yet, but the election, which has been over since a couple of weeks ago, is now officially over, although a lot of people don't want to confront the reality of that. Even the president, I think, has confronted the reality of that at this point. But former House Speaker Tim Jones with me in the next hour as well, and we'll have an audio cut of the day. You know, they're doing something fun at the Family Arena in St. Charles, the lot of lights for the holiday season. Tom O'Keefe is a film critic friend of mine. He runs the marketing at Family Arena. He's going to give us a preview at 4:20 on KMOX. I just saw this story, which is interesting, caught my eye in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch from Dave Nicholas from a little earlier this afternoon. Even in a pandemic, housing prices in the St. Louis area are rising at a record pace. What's interesting is, and I don't know if many of you felt the same way, I'm not an economist, nor do I play one on the radio, but I remember thinking a lot of things fatalistically, because that's my pattern, back in March when all this started, thinking, oh man, you know, because if you can come out of this thing with a job at the end of the pandemic, that's a big win. That is a huge win. But I also thought, man, what's going to happen to housing? The housing market is just going to collapse. Well, it's doing the opposite, because there's no supply right now. So the Federal Housing Agency, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, said that metro area prices rose 8.3% for the year that ended in September, and that includes a 3.7 rise in the third quarter alone. Both are record increases. All older transactions index, this is weird language, which includes both purchases and refinancing, shows double-digit price increases in the late 1970s, but that was the era of high inflation. Yeah, that's true, and that was when we moved here to St. Louis in 1979. I mean, the interest rates were, off the charts. In the third quarter, prices rose a little faster in St. Louis than the country as a whole. The U.S. purchase-only index was up 3.1% and 7.8% in the last year. Housing often, the story says, leads the economy out of recessions, and that's what's happening, says Lynn Fisher, the deputy director of the FHFA's Division of Research. In a statement, says the numbers show demand continues to outpace the supply of homes available for sale. So housing prices, you think about the history of the last 15 years, what happened in the aftermath of 2008. I was trying to sell a home in the aftermath of that. It didn't go very well. That's why I ended up being a landlord and finally sold it a few years ago. But they have now, these prices have risen 51% since they bottomed out in 2011. They're 24% above the pre-housing crisis level in 2006. One thing they mention here is the index is not adjusted for inflation, but still, I mean, that is really, it's really crazy what's happened to the housing market. I mean, if you have a home and you need to sell it, you're going to sell it right away. The problem is finding a house, and, you know, there's an upside and a downside. You get top dollar for your home, you're going to pay on the other end as well. Boise, Idaho, in case you were wondering, has the hottest housing market among the nation's 100 largest metro areas. Prices there rose 16.4% in the last 12 months. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, have the smallest increase at 2.1%. 2:56 will come up here to the top of the hour. Carol's going to have you all updated on the news. They'll ring the bell on Wall Street. Dave Simons will react to that here at 3 o'clock. Also, Rex Singfield, his thoughts on, we'll get his thoughts on the region, where we are in St. Louis. He's always very interested and invested in that, but also on The Queen's Gambit, which has now become the most watched new show on Netflix. It's a huge hit. He's, of course, Rex, the founder of the St. Louis Chess Club and a big chess aficionado and guru. He's coming up, former House Speaker Tim Jones as well. All in the next hour on KMOX. Hang in there.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.